Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, my name is Thorsten Schütte. I'm the director of Eat That Question, Frank Zappa in his own words, and I'm here in San Francisco for the first time in my life.
But the bigger question is, how do you say Frank Zappa in German?
In German, you would say Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa!
Yes.
The most important thing is, I would imagine that being that Germany is Germany, then Frank Zappa was probably huge there. What was your very, very first Zappa experience?
Well, my first Zappa encounter was at the age of 12 when I heard in music class at the end of the year before the summer break a song called Who Are the Brain Police? At the end of the school year, our teacher allowed us to pick one album from the shelves in the school. And back in the 70s, you know, there weren't that many pop records in our school collection. There was just this one recording called Entwicklung der Popmusik, Evolution of Pop Music by Deutsche Grammophon. And luckily, this
Deutsche Grammophon pop music.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So Deutsche Grammophon allowed itself to have this two albums, part one and part two. And on part two, on the second side, was not only Tony Williams' Lifetime and Richie Havens and The Velvet Underground, but also this one song called Who Are the Brain Police. Unfortunately, it was labeled wrongly on that album. It was called Plastic People. That's why it took me some time to really find that record that I was looking for. When I set forth to look for this album that contained Who Are the Brain Police, you couldn't find it because in the late 70s, the Verve MGM albums were out of print. They were not available in Germany. So I ended up actually with another album called Just Another Band from LA.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And you know, when you hear Magdalena and you're like, what exactly is that about?
No, not exactly, because I by that time barely spoke English, you know. I could say Bob has a cat and Pat has a mouse or something like that, but that was fairly it. And the second weird thing was, you know, when I brought this album home and I put it on, you know, the first track is a song called Billy the Mountain that lasts for, let's say,
12 minutes.
No, even longer. It's one. The whole album side
that's
is one
right,
song.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like an
right. The medley's on the second side.
And
that's right, right.
And yeah. So, I was simply overburdened, you know, by the sheer variety of what Zappa had to offer musically. But that was also the thing that made it very much challenging. You know, I was trying to get into it. I had some fun here and had some big question marks, but it was always mind-boggling music. And I did not understand a word what he was talking about.
That's so weird. Okay, so my audience knows that movies just don't go, you know, boom, they happen. And you had, speaking of mountains, you had a ton of mountains to climb here because you have a family that couldn't be any more protective. If you're picking, except for maybe Michael Jackson, right? You couldn't have a family that was more protective of the rights because he went through so many things in his life that were legally dangerous. You kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. But I'm more intrigued that you approached it from a research point of view, that you were collecting tons and tons of footage. So by the time you approached Gail, you had probably things she had never seen. I'm sure you did. You had to have had things. And that's like the best carrot you can wave in front of somebody is, I have stuff about your husband that you never seen, right?
I'm surprised about your sharp conclusions. In fact, it somehow went into this direction. When I approached the Family Trust for the first time, when I wrote to Gail for the first time, it was exactly what I said. I said, I have something here I really want to show to you because I think that you haven't seen it. And I want to introduce you to an idea. I really need to talk to you in person. Please let me come by. But yes, you are right. The Family Trust is very protective when it comes to Frank Zappa's music. And they are fully right with this, you know. I mean, from today's perspective, I can really understand that. But of course, you know, You have to overcome those little walls that are in the way and knock at people's doors. And eventually they let me in. It took me a year and a half until they opened the door. But the moment we had the opportunity to sit down and look at what I found so far, Gail understood the venture and the interest that I had, and also it was definitely interesting and worth for her to see what else I might find out there.
Speaking of Gail, so she died in 2015. Did she see the final cut of the film? I imagine it was actually, and when those things actually happened, that must have felt really good that you, before Sundance, you know, she passed away, what, October 2015. So you must have had your cut pretty much there, locked by then, right?
I met with Gail for the first time in 2008, and over the years, so from 2008 till 2015, we've been regularly in touch. You know, either I came to Los Angeles or she was in Europe where we met, or we were on the phone together and I told her what is the latest status of the project. And of course, when we learned about her illness, we were very concerned, and I'm really happy, you know, that by August 2015 we had the first rough cut, and on my birthday actually I went to see her the last time, and she saw the film and she loved it a lot and approved our work.
Yeah, well, you know, and they both till the end had experiences like that. I watched his last couple of interviews and he was every bit aware and knew, you know, and the most poignant thing that he said when I think it was Katie Couric who interviewed him, and he said, you know, when she said, you know, do you care about being remembered? And he said, absolutely, positively not. You know, he didn't care about being remembered. It didn't matter to him. He just did his art.
You want me to comment on that?
Yes, I do.
Look, I have, there's different ways of looking at that. First of all, I think his position, and he did not only say that in this very interview, he said it several times, you know, but I think this position is born out of something that I would rather describe as living in the now. You know, I think Frank Zappa was very much a man of the moment, you know, who put all his energies to get things done the very moment, you know, and he was not a dreamer or romantic about anything, but he was a very productive and instrumental person. So I think one should look at it from that side. And I also might dispute it a little bit, because if you look at the accuracy and the passion with which he curated his own materials and safeguarded it, and so that we are still profiting from very much today, you know, I think nobody does that if
he really documented.
If he would not care for what is going to happen to the materials. I mean, of course, he also did it because he was permanently working with the materials, you know, but I think one should take it with a grain of salt that he said, I don't care to be remembered, you know.
62 albums, movies, endless material to get into 90 minutes. So this is the classic question, but having made films myself, this is one of my favorite questions. How long was your first cut?
By the way, if you hear the noise in the background, we are standing at the entrance of the cinema hall, so people are approaching. Right. Just for you to understand why it might get maybe a little bit noisier.
I think Frank Zappa would like that. I think he'd like the walla walla in the background, wouldn't he?
Well, as long as you hear us loud and clearly, we also can accept that. So you were asking about the first edit. I think the first edit, but I wouldn't call it a rough cut, but accumulation of various scenes and outlines, you know. I think our first edit was 3.5 hours long, and I showed...
That's shorter than I thought it would have been.
Oh, thank you, but what's interesting to say about it is, and it was the first screening we had with our two producers, who were the ones that we let in to the studio, and we showed it to them, you know, and I was fearfully, you know, thinking, oh, what might they think about it? Because we were not at all convinced, you know, that this construction that we decided to go for so many years would actually work. And the beautiful thing was that after they watched the 3.5 hours, they looked at me and said, you know, we were not bored 1 minute. Which was not that very much helpful, you know, to make then conscious.
That was not really good notes, was it?
Well, it gave us confidence, and this is what producers should do, you know. It's important, you know, that they are giving you good backing and so on. So it confirmed, you know, that what we are sitting on is gold and that we can make something very, very good out of it.
So that's a really great segue to talking about how you chose to do this. And, you know, I'll just again save you repeating certain things about not using talking heads, right? Not doing the typical format of, you know, stills and pans and all of that, because it is in his own words. And luckily, you had the rare situation that there was a lot of that there. He was very much out there, and it really is all about his words and his music. But the choice of really using the footage in the way that you used it, you know.
Plus no photography, you know, no captions, no B-roll.
It's kind of brilliant because I think, again, when you think about Frank Zappa, he would have rejected a typical, you know, pan and scan. He would have just looked and said, you know, come on, I don't want to be a ViewMaster slideshow, right?
Well, who knows? Maybe you're right. So why all that? Because I think there's two reasons. The main reason is, you know, I wanted to give the maximum of running length to Frank Zappa in his own words, you know, because I think that if you really want to get into the modes or behind the eyes of this man and to understand him better, you have to contemplate and concentrate very much on him. So you have to break with the concept of short vox pops and the usual formulaic patterns, but really bring to the forefront the essence of what he had to say. And there's a lot that he had to say. And you can also see a development, you know, in how he created his position. So that's for one. And the other reason is, you know, that documentaries, because archive these days has become pretty expensive, you know, we just wanted to bring to the forefront the maximum of material that there was, you know, that people haven't seen for a very long time or that people hadn't seen at all, you know, to also create the ambient and the feeling for what he and his music was all about.
Your reason for making this film started at age 12, but as you progressed through it, what, you know, I don't like the words mission statements, but I'll just throw something out there. Was it because you wanted to share your love with other people and let them understand this complicated man and get the music out there? What was your, when you really look back on it, what was your motivation?
No, I think it's very clear and simple. And sometimes, you know, the clear and simple ideas are the best pitch for your documentary. I saw something when I was contemplating over all of this archive footage and looking deeply into extensive interviews with him. I just saw a different Frank Zappa emerge from the cliche stereotype one that we knew. And I thought it was worth bringing that to the forefront. And the whole technique of how we did it in the film is serving that purpose. You know, we wanted to bring out all of these aspects in the material, and that was the reason, you know.